if you wanted to funnel billions of dollars into Africa, say like 10 years ago, you didn't fly to Lagos or Nairobi. You flew to this really beautiful tropical island in the Indian Ocean, which is Mauritius. But today, the biggest money in the world is completely ignoring the white sand beaches of Mauritius for, well, a tiny gray corporate office building in Wilmington, Delaware.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like a weird geographical punchline, but it's actually one of the most profound shifts in global finance that we've seen in decades. You have this tiny US state that is entirely outcompeting an island nation that was literally built from the ground up to be a financial gateway.
It's wild. And, to figure out the mechanics behind how that is even possible, we are pulling from a really fascinating piece of source material for today's deep dive.
Yeah, it's a great read.
It's an excerpt from the Capital Codex, and we're specifically looking at Chapter 3, Section 2, which is titled Shift 4, Venture Capital Bypasses the Traditional Hub. The author is Doris Odit-Achenga. She runs Odit Frontier Partners, which is this frontier capital architecture firm based in Kampala, Uganda.
And their entire focus, which is really cool, is designing adaptive capital systems for volatile markets. Her vantage point is just critical here because she treats capital not just as, money moving around a spreadsheet, but as a full-on architectural system. She looks at the structural rules that actually force money to behave the way it does.
So our mission for this deep dive today, for you listening, is to really break down what Odit-Achenga calls the law of intermediary compression. We want to understand these sort of hidden forces that are completely rerouting how global money flows. And to ground us, let's just look at the raw numbers she pulls from the Partech 2025 Africa Tech Venture Capital Report.
Yeah, because the data paints a very clear picture of a market that is, well, it's not just recovering, it's fundamentally transforming.
All right, so African tech funding recovered to $4.1 billion in 2025. That is a 25% jump year over year.
Huge.
The equity funding side stabilized at about $2.4 billion across 462 deals, which, to be fair, I mean, that's about half of the massive peak we saw during that crazy zero interest rate run of 2021 and 2022.
Sure.
But, and this is the most interesting part of this report, the debt. We're looking at a record-breaking debt surge of $1.64 billion across 107 deals.
Which brings us right to the central paradox that Odit-Achenga highlights. Because whether you are looking at the $2.4 billion equity or that massive $1.6 billion in debt, almost none of this venture capital is touching Mauritius.
Wait, really? None of it.
Basically none. Africa's primary established financial hub is just entirely missing from the venture equation right now.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we can understand why venture capital is just straight up ghosting Mauritius, we have to look at what made Mauritius the financial kingpin of the continent in the first place, right? Because there are essentially two completely different lanes for capital flowing into Africa.
Yeah, let's start with the older, heavier lane. So traditional private equity, or PE and development finance institutions, the DFIs. For those massive players, and we're talking, sovereign wealth funds, major pension funds, state-backed development money, Mauritius is absolutely essential.
Because it acts as a very specific type of legal shield and like a router.
Right. A router is a really good way to put it. They rely on these structures in Mauritius called Global Business Companies, or GBCs, because the island spent decades negotiating this incredibly dense network of double taxation agreements, or DTAs, with all these African nations.
And just to pause on that for a second, the mechanism of a double taxation agreement is exactly what it sounds like. I mean, if a major European pension fund invests in some massive infrastructure project in Kenya, they really don't want to get heavily taxed on their profits by the Kenyan government and then get taxed all over again when they bring the money back to Europe.
Oh, absolutely not. That would kill the returns.
Right. So Mauritius sits in the middle with tax treaties for both sides, smoothing that friction out. Plus, they operate on trusted common law courts.
Exactly. So if you are a traditional private equity fund and you're trying to deploy, say, $1 billion across really complex physical assets in Kenya, Nigeria, Ghana, Rwanda, and Egypt, you set up your base in Mauritius. It manages that crazy cross-border complexity incredibly well.
It makes me think of like a massive customs border checkpoint. Like if you're moving a huge, heavy convoy of traditional private equity money, this slow-moving, highly regulated freight, you absolutely need a physical checkpoint. You need the Mauritius border agents to stamp all the passports, calculate the tariffs, and ensure the cargo is, you know, legally compliant before it crosses onto the continent.
That's a great analogy. And that physical infrastructure is not something you can just spin up overnight. It took Mauritius literally decades of really complex diplomatic and legal maneuvering to build that customs checkpoint.
Wait, hold on, though. If Mauritius has the tax treaties already signed and the courts already built, why are the massive global venture capital funds like your Sequoia, Andreessen Horowitz, or Y Combinator, why are they completely ignoring it? Is it just a logistical thing? Like, is it simply too expensive to run a VC fund out of an island in the Indian Ocean?
See, people always assume it comes down to cost or some kind of hidden tax penalty, but Odit Achenga makes a huge point to completely debunk that in the source material.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if venture capital was purely hunting for tax neutrality and low costs, I mean, the Cayman Islands or the British Virgin Islands offer equal or even superior offshore benefits compared to Delaware. Yeah. Delaware did not win this market by having, like, a cheaper filing fee or a better tax loophole.
Okay, so they aren't avoiding Mauritius because of the price tag?
No, not at all. They're avoiding it because they're playing a completely different game. African startups raising venture capital, they aren't setting up a complex Mauritian holding company. They are incorporating directly as Delaware C Corp. So the U.S. investor leads the round and they wire the money directly into that Delaware entity, which in turn owns the operating startup in Lagos or Nairobi.
And for anyone listening who hasn't had the absolute joy of setting up a company in the U.S., a Delaware C Corp is just the standard corporate structure that separates the company's liabilities and taxes from its owners. It is basically the default setting for Silicon Valley.
Yeah, exactly. So going back to your metaphor, if private equity is a convoy of heavy freight trucks that absolutely needs a customs checkpoint, venture capital operates more like digital fiber optic cables.
Oh, I like that.
Right. The data, or in this case, the capital, flows directly from the source to the destination. It just doesn't need to stop at a physical border to get its passport stamped. Mauritius simply isn't on the map for that kind of flow.
But that begs the ultimate question here. If it isn't about tax loopholes and it isn't about cost, what is the invisible gravity pulling thousands of African startups to incorporate in a single, unassuming state on the eastern seaboard of the U.S.?
Yeah.
Like, what does Delaware have that a purpose-built financial hub doesn't?
Well, the author breaks this down into what she calls the four structural lock-ins of the Delaware moat.
Okay.
And this is where we move from mere preferences into absolute structural requirements. So let's look at the life cycle of one of these startups. The very first lock-in happens at the foundation, which is dispute resolution, specifically the Delaware Court of Chancery.
Which operates completely differently from a normal court system.
Radically differently.
Wow.
Delaware operates a dedicated corporate court. There are no juries.
Not at all.
None. You have specialist judges, known as chancellors, who spend their entire careers looking solely at corporate law. But more importantly, they have literally centuries of accumulated, highly predictable corporate case law behind them.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because it's like having the ultimate referee.
Mm.
If you are playing a wildly complex, high-stakes sport like venture capital, you don't want a random jury of spectators trying to figure out who committed a foul.
Exactly.
You want the referee who literally wrote the rule book, who has presided over every single obscure foul for the last 100 years, and who can make a ruling with absolute predictable precision.
Predictability. That is the key word. VCs are already taking on massive, massive risk by betting on early stage tech in frontier markets. They just cannot afford legal risk piled on top of that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If there is a dispute between, say, a founder in Nigeria, a lead investor in California, and limited partners in Europe, they need to know exactly how a judge will rule. And no African jurisdiction, and honestly not even Mauritius, has the centuries of case law required to offer that level of absolute legal certainty.
But wait, sure, the referee is great, but isn't it an incredibly heavy lift to force an African founder to use an American court system? Like, why hasn't a simpler local alternative popped up to handle this?
Well, that brings us to the second structural lock-in in the startup's life cycle. Odit Achenga calls it investor grammar. The venture capital ecosystem operates on a highly specific, standardized set of documents.
Standardized documents, like a safe note. And just as a quick refresher for you listening, a safe note stands for a simple agreement for future equity.
Right.
It's basically that standardized IOU that Silicon Valley invented so they could just hand startups quick cash without having to spend months arguing over exactly how much the company is worth right at that moment.
And that is the perfect example. Because every safe note, every term sheet, every side letter produced by these major global VC networks is written in Delaware's legal language. The entire diligence and operational infrastructure on the investor side just assumes a Delaware C Corp.
Ah, I see. If you're listening to this and you've ever tried to open a really crucial file on your computer, but you just don't have the right software installed, you know that sheer panic and frustration.
Oh, yeah.
That's what these VCs face if an African startup isn't speaking the Delaware language. It just won't open.
The friction is totally insurmountable. If an African founder insists on using a Mauritius GBC, every single counterparty in the deal has to rewrite their standard, battle-tested documents.
What a nightmare.
Yeah, the American VC's lawyers have to suddenly learn Mauritian corporate law. They have to translate a safe note into a foreign legal framework and then ensure it actually holds up in a court they aren't familiar with.
Which slows the deal down from, what, days to months. And in venture capital, momentum is everything. Like, the friction alone kills the deal.
Exactly. Venture capital is designed to be frictionless. They just want to wire the money, sign the standard docs, and get back to building the product. Delaware provides the universal grammar that allows that kind of speed.
Okay, so the startups are forced to use the Delaware referee to resolve disputes, and they are forced to speak the Delaware language to get the money in the door. But getting the money is only phase two.
Right.
I mean, a startup doesn't stay a startup forever. Eventually, these venture capitalists want their massive payout. They want to cash out.
Which requires an exit. So either going public on an exchange like the NASDAQ or getting acquired by a massive tech incumbent, you know, like Google or a global bank. And this is the third lock-in, exit legibility.
How you look to the buyer.
Precisely. Let's look at the mechanism of an actual acquisition. If a U.S. tech giant wants to buy an African startup that is wrapped in a Delaware C Corp, it is a perfectly seamless transaction. The acquirer's legal team looks at the structure and instantly understands it.
They speak the same language.
Exactly. They can merge the Delaware entity directly into their own U.S. corporate structure without breaking a sweat. It is instantly legible.
But what happens if that African startup had grown up inside a Mauritius structure? Why is that such a huge problem for an exit?
Because a Mauritius entity is governed by a completely different national corporate code, so an American buyer literally cannot merge it directly into their U.S. entity. To execute the acquisition, they have to hire specialized cross-border tax lawyers to completely dissolve the African holding structure, reincorporate it in a compatible jurisdiction, and carefully transfer all the intellectual property over.
Which just sounds like an administrative nightmare.
It is. And worse, it triggers massive, completely unpredictable tax events for both the founders and the investors, and you are forced to do all of this heavy lifting at the exact moment of the exit, which is when speed matters most.
Right, because acquisition windows close fast.
Really fast. If the market dips or, you know, the acquiring CEO just changes their mind while you are spending 6 months unwinding a Mauritius company, the deal falls apart. Delaware eliminates that entire translation step. You are dressed for the exit from day one.
Wow. So Delaware has the ultimate referee. It provides the native software everyone runs on, and it's built to instantly plug into a massive U.S. exit. It really does feel like an unbeatable system.
It does.
But looking at the source material, what happens to a market as it starts to mature? Like, while they eventually outgrow the need for U.S. structures, we mentioned those massive debt numbers at the very beginning of the deep dive, does an African startup rely on Delaware forever?
And that is the fourth lock-in Odit Achenga outlines, which is actually a trajectory of maturation. Let's look really closely at that $1.64 billion in debt we talked about.
Okay.
As a startup ecosystem matures, the fastest growing financing instrument stops being early stage equity, and it shifts toward venture debt and revenue-based finance.
Let me just jump in really quickly to clarify revenue-based finance for everyone. Because unlike equity, where you sell a piece of your company forever, revenue-based finance is essentially getting a cash advance and you pay it back every month as a fixed percentage of your incoming revenue. It's tied directly to the actual cash flow of the business.
And because it is tied so closely to local cash flows, local bank accounts, and local operational assets, those debt instruments operate under local regulatory frameworks. They do not need a Delaware wrapper because they aren't aiming for a NASDAQ IPO. They are secured against the real-world business operating locally in Lagos, Nairobi, or Cairo.
Wait, really? So this massive wave of debt completely abandons the Delaware structure?
Well, it doesn't abandon it entirely, but the action clearly moves to the local rails. The debt providers are underwriting the local entity, not the U.S. holding company. The asset class actively grows away from offshore hubs. As the ecosystem matures, it naturally sheds the need for complex offshore wrappers.
That is wild. So Mauritius didn't just miss the current equity wave. The next, more mature wave of debt is moving even further away from them, right into the domestic local markets.
Yeah, this is a structural evolution that Mauritius simply cannot interrupt by, you know, offering a better tax rate or a cheaper filing fee. The natural direction of travel for capital is just bypassing them completely.
Which leads us to Oda DeChenga's broader thesis here.
Yeah.
This completely reframes how we view competition, not just in venture capital, but really in how any global system operates.
The big realization here is that Mauritius isn't actually losing a race against Delaware. It is a race Mauritius was never even in.
Wow.
The private equity segment and the venture capital segment, they run on entirely structurally different rails. Delaware didn't beat Mauritius by building a better customs checkpoint. Delaware built an ecosystem so deep and so self-contained that the question of competing with it never even arose for venture capitalists.
So taking a step back here, what does this all mean for the listener? I mean, is this just a really interesting, isolated quirk of how global finance works? Or is there a bigger lesson here?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it is a profound warning sign for any industry. The author calls this the law of intermediary compression. The principle states that when a system develops its own internal grammar, its own internal legal, financial, and operational language, it completely eliminates the need for external bridges.
Intermediary compression. So the middleman gets squeezed out.
Squeezed out entirely. Delaware isn't just a physical jurisdiction on a map. It is a fully self-contained operating system. It provides the formation rules, the fundraising language, and the exit infrastructure all in one closed loop. And once that operating system is embedded globally, external nodes like Mauritius become completely unnecessary to that specific ecosystem.
Yeah, it makes me think about how physical media transitioned into the digital age.
Mm.
Like streaming services didn't just try to build a slightly nicer Blockbuster video store with better lighting or, you know, cheaper late fees.
Right.
They created a totally self-contained digital system of delivery that made the entire concept of a physical store completely obsolete. The middleman, the video store, was compressed out of existence because the new system didn't require a physical bridge to reach the customer.
That is the perfect modern parallel. Systems that internalize their own coordination functions will always crush external intermediaries. Mauritius assumed capital inherently had to cross its physical and legal bridge to get to Africa. Delaware proved that if you build the entire road yourself, from the VC's bank account in Silicon Valley all the way to the NASDAQ exit, you just don't need a bridge in the Indian Ocean at all.
That is such a powerful lens to view the world through. So let's quickly recap the journey we've been on today. We started with this massive surge in African tech funding, specifically looking at a landscape where $4.1 billion is flowing into the continent. We discovered that almost all of that venture capital was completely bypassing Mauritius, the continent's primary purpose-built financial hub.
And we learned that Delaware's total dominance in capturing that flow relies on internal grammar, structural lock-ins, that specialized court of chancery, and seamless exit legibility rather than anything to do with being a tax haven.
It is the ultimate triumph of a self-contained system over a traditional intermediary. Which brings this right back to you, listening to this deep dive right now. Consider your own industry. Think about your own business or even your career. Are you operating as a Mauritius? Are you acting as a highly efficient bridge, assuming that people simply have to use you to get from point A to point B? Because as Oda DeChenga points out so clearly, the ultimate threat to your business isn't a competitor building a slightly cheaper or faster bridge.
No, the ultimate threat is a self-contained system that emerges and makes the route you sit on entirely unnecessary.
Exactly. And as we wrap up today's deep dive, we want to leave you with one final lingering thought to mull over. We talked extensively about how Delaware compressed the route, completely bypassing the need for Mauritius. But let's look at the horizon based on those debt numbers we talked about.
Right, because if Delaware compressed the legal route for venture capital by being this perfectly legible, self-contained system for early stage equity, what happens when African local markets mature to the point where their internal rails become fully self-contained?
Oh, wow. Because we are already seeing the leading edge of that with the $1.6 billion debt surge, right?
Precisely. If venture debt and revenue-based finance are already pushing billions of dollars natively onto local African frameworks, could the law of intermediary compression eventually make Delaware itself unnecessary for the next generation of global capital?
That's crazy to think about.
I mean, as the ecosystem matures, will capital simply route directly from a global investor straight into a hyper-efficient, fully mature, local African jurisdiction, skipping the U.S. operating system entirely?
If the invisible magnet of capital can shift from the beaches of Mauritius to a corporate office in Delaware, there is no law of physics saying it can't shift again. The center of gravity is always moving. We want to warmly thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the hidden architecture of global capital. Keep questioning the systems around you, and we'll catch you on the next one.